new sin. So, what's been up, man? How's things going? Things are finally going good. Just getting our sea legs back, so to speak, of being on the road and just getting used to being really tired all the time and eating the dollar menu every day and having your bowels and everything else adjusted at. So, but other than that, it's been a pleasure to be on the road up in Motorhead again, too. Yeah, so you guys are out with Motorhead again and with Corrosion of Conformity. How long are you guys going to be out with them? We're going to be out with them until, I believe, March 21st. We end in Chicago. We do two dates in Chicago and a Milwaukee date. And then we're going to come home for a couple weeks, and we've got some stuff lined up for April. And then we meet up with this tour again. When they come back into the States, they do like a 15-date run in Canada. And I think we meet up with them in early May, and we do the last week of the tour here on the East Coast once again. So.
And now a lot of people from Syracuse wondering when are you guys going to have a Syracuse show again?
Probably for the CD release show. CD comes out in America on May 31st. So we'll probably be looking at in the June, early June, hopefully. It all depends on what our schedule is going to be like. Probably in June, right before summer.
Okay, now tell me about the new record here. What's it going to be called?
The new record's called Recipe for Disaster, because everything in our existence over the past, I don't know, ever since we've been a band in September of 2001, everybody that we brought in, everybody that we've kicked out, everybody that's been involved in some way, shape, or form with the band should have spelled ultimate death, a brand new sin, and basically becomes down to, it was a recipe for disaster, but we ended up coming through it all. We wrote 70 songs for this record during the time that we were going through all the BS of the industry.
70?
70.
That's a lot of freaking songs. Yeah.
We had nothing else to do. We were in limbo for so long as to going from one label that went bankrupt to another label that didn't know what they were going to do with us. I mean, it was a major label. It was a Sony-owned label. We had the money and everything else, but it was just like they had no idea what they were going to do with Brand New Sin. So what it came down to was, all right, get our manager and our lawyer to work on it. And in the meantime, the only thing that we can do is just get up in the practice room every day and write and just jam. And it really shows, and we're hoping that this record really shows, like, the greatest hits of our writing process for the past year and a half.
Cool. Now, since the first album, you guys have gone through some lineup changes and stuff, and what led to that?
I guess more than anything, without having to get really into detail with some of the stuff that happened, was that it was just, it was those times that were just, things weren't gelling in the band. From our first drummer leaving, Mike leaving, and us getting Kevin Dean, and then with the loss of Flatter, was just more or less a decision that was made by the band to we're all gelling on one aspect, but, we were just, there's, like any company or any business or anything else, you find those parts that don't seem to be working. You try to get to the best possible team to get business done and get shit done, and that's basically what's come down to.
Now, the sound's going to be a little different now with the new album, right? We only have two guitar players now, and so it's going to be not quite as full as that sound like you had before with the three guitars, or?
It's really weird. It's like we thought that for a little while. We thought, we're going to lose a little bit of the sound, but from what people have been telling us live is that it seems to have gotten bigger and it seemed to lock down, which sometimes less is more from what I guess we've gathered. And Chris and Kenny play so well together. They're both on the same page and, complement each other. If Chris is weak part in something and it goes to another part where Kevin, or I mean, I should say Chris is stronger at it, so.
Now, tell me about how you came to get into the band. This is kind of a really cool story. I'm being a singer, plus my ass for 10 years, I'm kind of a little jealous of hell about it. It's an awesome story, though. It's like every musician's wet dream. Tell me about this.
Okay, so from the beginning, I guess I was living in Baltimore at the time. I went down to a recording school. And was getting ready to move back home and try to find a career in doing live sound and everything else. And one night, good old Chucky Love, for those people who know Syracuse area well, who know Chucky Love is, gives me a drunken phone call at 4:30 in the morning. Tells me, he's like, "God Below needs a singer. You need to come up and try out when you get home." I'm like, "Well, dude, I don't really,
I'm not a screamer. I go, I'm more or less a singer. He goes, that's what they're looking for. So 2 weeks later, I move home. I go to the to where Chris and Slatter had worked at the time, and they gave me a demo tape. And they said, hey, you know, you got till Monday to come up with something. You know, meet us down at the Love Shack, and we'll jam out. Monday comes. We had wrote Broken Soul, and then we wrote The Oath, and they looked at me and they said, you're in. And then I had to tell them that, hey, this is cool, but this is my first band. You know, I've never been in a band before. You know, I've always sang and played piano and sat in with bands, but this was like my first real gig. This was the first band I actually shot for and tried to be in. So, yeah. You know, roundabout way, it's been a long story. It's been a long story.
And now you're on a tour with Motorhead again. That's the first time you've been out with Saliva and a bunch of other bands. And, so who are some of the other killer bands you guys have been out touring with so far?
Over the past 3 years, man, is that we've been out with, you know, with Prong, we played with Chimera, we played with 36 Crazy Fist, we played with Fu Manchu, we've done tours with Clutch, we've done tours with Kitty, we've done tours with Saliva and Breaking Benjamin, we've done tours with Black Label Society, we've toured with Biohazard, we've toured with Shadows Fall, and, you know, the list always seems to go on, and it's really weird, especially when we sit down and we really analyze all the different bands that we played with, and that's what it really comes down to. It's like we haven't just played with, like, you know, just rock bands or with metal bands, but we've played from some of the heaviest shit that you can find all the way up to the most radio-friendly bullshit that you can get out there. But it's a testament to our band. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys have a sound. It's a lot of times that you guys have that big, solid guitar sound from like the 70s, a big rich sound, but you got a nice heaviness to it. But I mean, you get melodic on things. It's definitely an interesting mix that comes together to mix up Branderson. You know, it makes you guys able to play with a bunch of different bands like that. It opens you up to all kinds of possibilities of making new fans.
Yeah, I mean, that's a cool thing. Like, on this tour, we're doing Cleveland, Ohio, and like two with Motorhead, and then we come back 2 weeks later with Life of Agony. And some people are like, you know, you're playing the same town twice in 2 weeks. But if you think about it, man, the Motorhead fans are a little bit different than Life Agony fans. And it's really cool. And, like, we got some dates coming up to do some other stuff. And we're very lucky in that aspect to be able to do that and play with different bands and reach the wide range of audiences, from kids all the way up to people that are, you know, my parents' age that are, you know, grew up on Southern classic rock and all, you know, just all the good stuff. So, I guess that's a good quality for a band to have.
Diversity, yeah. Speaking of diversity, you know, I've come out, I've seen you on Sunday nights playing piano, doing Who covers. It's quite the switch from what you see you doing on stage here with Branderson.
Yeah, when you see me do my piano stuff, that's what got me going. That's what I started doing. That's how I started singing. That's where Joel Tier as a musician really began. So it's a lot of fun because I used to use that to make money and to drink for free at bars in college and most of all, you know, get laid. Because I mean, you sit down and you sing a song to a girl on the piano, dude.
Yeah.
Unless there's something, I mean, dude, Liberace, if he wasn't gay, would have gotten laid every goddamn day, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. But I tell you, it's entertaining as hell to come out and see you do that. It's a lot of fun sitting around, you know, and checking out doing the Who stuff. And so, I mentioned you doing the Who. Who are some of your biggest influences?
Oh, man, my influences are so wide. It comes from, you know, the core influences that really, like, you know, with the Brand New Sin side of things is, you know, just classic metal, your Metallica, your Iron Maidens, your Danzig, your Misfits, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Allman Brothers, Bad Company, on and on. But, you know, I also have this really weird side to myself where it's, like, really into, like, old Otis Redding and Marvin Gaye, and I really appreciate, like, the vocal side of things and how awesome some of these singers have been over the years, especially people like, you know, Freddie Mercury, and just freaking believable. And then there's times you'll walk in, you'll see me listening to George Jones and old Hank Williams and
and
Johnny Nash and Johnny Cash, and I mean just so much. I mean, basically what it comes down to is I don't like to I mean, I tell people, I'm like, I don't pigeonhole myself to one kind of music. If it's good, I like it, regardless of what genre it is.
Exactly. I think that's a sign of a true musician. You have to be able to respect every different type of music, whether it's your thing you like to listen to all the time. Like, I might not be a huge rap fan, but I can appreciate good stuff when I hear it, you know?
Absolutely. That's what it all comes down to, man.
I'm going to switch gears and ask you about another thing about on tour. You told me a story once about playing condiment baseball. I'd like to have you share this with the guys. We'll check out the site here.
We're on the Black Label Society tour, and I think we're playing Manchester, New Hampshire. And we didn't have a night off, but Black Label's like, we're not really going to get a hotel room. We're just going to sit out in the back of this club. It was in the back of like a mini mall. We were just in the back alleyway where all the dumpsters were. We're just going to sit out here. We're going to pull the grill out. We're going to barbecue and everything out. So we start freaking hanging out and getting drunk as usual every night. And we're on Zach's bus, and he pulls out. He had a custom-made Louisville Slugger given to him. You know, Zach Wilde autographed everything. So pull it out, and he's like, I think it's time for a game of condiment baseball. We're like, what the hell? What do you mean condiment baseball? So, you know, he says, like, we're going to pull out everything that's not glass in both of the vans that we have and just smash it. If it's, you know, bags of Doritos and jars of plastic mayonnaise and apples and oranges and bags of cereal and milk cartons and everything else, and set up a baseball diamond and divvied up teams at pitchers. It's on video. I'm still waiting to get the video from Zach. He's not always as fast as he always likes to say, but, I mean, we're just destroying things. And we got some pictures photo-wise that it just shows us the next day just sitting there. And, I mean, it basically looked like a grocery store had exploded. And I remember the bus driver showing up at, like, 7 a.m., and there's, you know, egg and fucking everything just covered on the side of the buses, and they were just pissed. You know, Zach started handing the money. Here's the money. You know, let's just get the buses clean. You know, I'm sorry. But, you know, that was one of those nights that I'll never forget, and I'll always be up in the top part of the memories of touring. And it was just, I mean, especially when he threw a five. It was one of those big gallon jugs of mayonnaise. And he just cracked the top just enough so you get the effect. And as soon as I hit that fucking thing, dude, it exploded. I mean, the next day, I passed out on Zach's bus. I woke up. Both him and I had mayonnaise encrusted into our ears and and I had a big goatee at the time. I mean, and I didn't even take a shower. I just went and played another show. So I must have fucking smelled even worse than normally, you know.
Now, I'm doing the Hero Quest thing on my website where I'm looking to meet the top 10 biggest heroes of my life. One of them is Lemmy Kilmister, which is really odd. I'm sitting here looking at him playing video games like I do at the bar when I'm not doing anything. What's he like as a person? You've been out on the road with him before. I see you talking to him every day. What's he like as a person?
For the most part, man, he's very, very quiet, very soft-spoken. And he's fucking larger than life. I mean, he's just one of those people. When he walks into a room, you're just like, oh my God, there he is. You don't even know what to do. You don't know what to say to him. But as I've gotten to know over the couple of times of touring, that you can just go up and have a conversation with him, and he'll talk to you. And every once in a while, he'll come up and start shooting the shit with you. But he's very cool. He makes sure that all the bands on his tour taken care of, and it's just, I mean, the knowledge and the experiences that man has been through,
right.
And to still be doing it, he'd be 60 years old.
He just turned 60 the other day, I guess.
It's just like, what the, I can't imagine doing this at 60 years old.
30th anniversary for Motorhead, 30 years, that's almost as long as I've been alive, you know?
Yeah, I know, and he was in Hawkwind before that. Yeah. And he was Jimi Hendrix's freaking guitar tech back.
He also played in. He also recorded a couple of things with the Rockin' Vickers. A bunch of cover songs, a bunch of little singles. They never got major attention at all, but it was pretty funny.
But it's just really cool. I mean, even you just saw him when we were sitting in there playing pool, and you just know he's there.
Yeah, dude, I can feel it when he walked in there, and it's like, I'm like, oh my God, it's Lemmy, you know? And I wanted to walk up and go, hey man, can I get a picture? But I don't know, it's Lemmy, you know?
Exactly. That's what we thought for like the first week and a half we're on tour. Than the first time, we were so afraid to approach him, you know? Like, we didn't know if he was going to be like, you know, fuck
like you, and I mean, you never know. I mean, and he has every right to tell you to fuck off. He's Lemmy, for Christ's sake. You know, but he's really cool, and not just Lemmy, but, you know, Phil is the same way. Phil is, like, straight out of a Monty Python sketch, man. The guy is just so scatterbrained. And Mickey D is really the one that we end up hanging out with probably the most. And he's just a really cool dude and one of the most amazing, amazing drummers I have ever freaking seen. You know, we make it a point every night to try to get up right next to Mickey D because they have such the full stacks. You can walk right up on stage behind the stacks and just sit there and watch Mickey D play and all the bands that he's played with back to, you know, all the King Diamond years.
Right.
He played with Dokken and, you know, and all these years with Motorhead, and he's even played with friggin', you know, he just did a Halloween record last year. And, I mean, he's amazing. It's been a lot of fun, so, but Lemmy is definitely probably the biggest presence I've ever seen in my life, music-wise.
So you guys, you got a couple weeks coming off, you said, and then you're going to be back out again. And then what are your plans for summer? You guys going to be touring big for the summer?
Yeah, nothing's confirmed yet. We got a lot of different offers going on, but basically we're going to have a couple weeks off in April, back out, start ramping everything up in the end of April, all of May, all summer here in the States. And what we're if everything works out, right, we'll be going to Europe in the fall, spending a couple months over there because we're finally going to be able to get a release of record over there. And then who knows from there, man. That basically is what our plans are for this year. Maybe hopefully make it to the holidays in one piece and have some time off with the family. And then as Century Media said, we're going to be working this record for quite some time, and 18 months to 2 years. So this is going to spill into 2006 as well before we get off the road and really stop campaigning this one. But that's what we've always wanted to do. So
now, one of the things is, I mean, you guys' records sound great. You know, but you guys are definitely a live experience to see, you know, because you feel the power in the room when you guys do that. Any chance there may be in a live DVD, any chance or anything like that coming out?
We've talked, we've thrown the ideas out and stuff like that, and we've definitely sent it to the label because we're like, that's one thing that we've always had a hard time doing. We pride ourselves on being such a good live band, and it's really tough to try to capture something like that in a studio.
Right.
Just because of the, I guess you want to say sterileness of the things that go on in there, but we've been filming stuff and we've had people film shows and everything else, so we're really hoping that one of these days we can really like get the full experience. But I think if we do, we're going to do it full on and, you know, bring all the cameras in and just, you know, show everybody what a brand new Sin show is about. Because if you're not a fan of ours and you come see us live, and some people are like, I really wasn't in the record, but, you know, I see you guys live and I'm sold. Or people are like, you know, I was a fan of you, but now that I see you live, I'm a huge fan. So it's like, that's a cool thing for a band to have, because you don't know how many times I've seen bands that I was really excited to see, and then I watched them, and then I was just like, they fucking totally suck live, you know?
So far, what have you guys been out now? What's the biggest crowd you guys ever played in front of?
Oh, there's a couple of different ones that we've been. I mean, Motorhead, we've had some dates where there's like 3,000 people at it. We played the Black Label Society, and that was up into 3,000 seaters, and same with Saliva. But I think that was probably, I think the biggest crowds that we ever played in are places like, for the people in Syracuse, which compared to be like the Landmark Theater, and just a little bit larger than that for size. So, you know, obviously we're hoping to play bigger and bigger, but we played some of these bigger shows, and it's cool to play in front of all these people, but you start losing the intimacy that you have in small clubs, and we really love doing that too, but, you know, I'm not going to complain if I get to play in 5,000 people, you know.
You should make those bastards at K-Rock put you guys on a K-Rockathon this year.
I'd love to.
Yeah, that's kind of a thing with that. I was always pissed about those guys doing that. You guys were a local band, got a national recording contract, but they won't put you in the rotation because you guys were a local band.
Right.
You know, and those bastards should step up, put you guys in the damn K-Rockathon and then deal with it, you know.
We'll see what happens. I mean, politics is politics, and there's always a reason behind it, and, you know, I don't understand it one bit, but, you know, it's beyond me, you know, so we shall see. One of these days, if the people aren't supporting us in Syracuse, are waiting to see what happens, and all of a sudden, if these people come around, and if some of these people that were, like, never there, now all of a sudden are there, you know, so.
I'm going to wrap up here. I'm just going to ask one last thing. Any final comments, anything you want to say before we get off this?
BrandNewSin.com or BrandNewSin.org for all the information. We got emails for all of us, and we answer them. Record comes out May 31st in America. There's an EP available now at our shows and also through the website, and there's going to be some available in some mom-and-pop stores. So they're only printing 5,000 of those to begin with, so it's going to be a limited edition. So go check that out. We hope to see you on the road, people.
Well, thanks a lot, Joe.